Morning, folks. Welcome to Warbirds in Review 2015. And we're going to have a nice little talk today about the mosquito. So if the rest of you folks will come on up, it's time. We have the owner of the airplane, the owner of the museum. This is Jerry Yagan. He is the owner of the Military Aviation Museum in Virginia Beach. This is Jerry. Anywhere, Jerry. We have Warren Denham here. He was the restoration in New Zealand. Warren is a tall fella. Mike Spaulding is the chief pilot in Virginia Beach. And this is our test pilot here in New Zealand. And that is Dave. All right, go ahead. Jerry, tell us how you acquired the airplane.
Warren had just finished some other work for me and on some other aircraft, award-winning airplanes. And he said, well, what are we going to do next? And I said, you got any ideas? You got any suggestions for us? And he said, what about a mosquito? And I said, what? Well, that's very interesting. And I laughed. This was a phone conversation. I was in the United States, I think. And I said, I don't know where we're going to find a mosquito. And Warren said, let me see what I can find. And shortly thereafter, we found a mosquito, and Warren told me about it. And that was in Western Canada, and it was terrible looking. It was a pile of wooden mush. That's about all that it was. And that's how we found it. Warren found it for us through a guy in New Zealand.
So then you took it back to New Zealand. Okay, now, Mike, you've flown the airplane and you know all the specifications. Tell us some about the specifications, the speeds and the weights and the lengths and what have you.
It grosses out at 20,500 pounds, but we are a lot lighter than that. We're about 13.5. Carries 452 gallons of fuel, imperial gallons internally, and they had different size of exterior tanks. The wingspan is over 50 feet. When they shipped it over from New Zealand, they had to get a special container to ship the wing and had to have it special built. It's built in Canada, in Downsview, Canada. It stayed its whole life in Canada. So it has Merlin 225s, carbureted engines. We normally cruise about 225 knots, but it'll do 285 mile an hour as its top speed. Some books show more, just depends, but we don't run it over like 330 mile an hour. We try to take care of it, since it's the only one.
But it was a multi-purpose airplane. What all was it used for?
They used it for all sorts of things. This one here is a fighter bomber, and it pretty much flies that way. It's kind of in the middle of the road. They had a light fighter version, a straight bomber version, a night fighter version, a photo ship version, and then whatever else they could manage to do with it that would do the job.
Do you happen to know how many they built between Canada and Great Britain?
About 8,000 that were built.
And it's kind of unique in that when this airplane was designed, that the Brits really weren't too interested in it. So they didn't fund the initial funding of the airplane before they produced them.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead, Warren.
Hello, everybody. My name's Warren Denholm. Yes, when de Havilland in the UK were first, there was a specification issued by the British government for a fast bomber, and de Havilland had decided that they would build the airplane out of wood for two reasons, I guess. One was that aluminium had become very popular with the massive increase in production of regular airplanes, metal airplanes, you know, like the Lancaster and all the other Spitfire and what have you that were being built at the time in the UK. So they perceived the shortage of aluminium, and they had quite a bit of experience with wood-produced airplanes in the history leading up to World War II. And they also recognised that there was a lot of small industry around Britain that were making fine furniture and things like that that were no longer busy because the war was on and the king didn't need any new furniture. So they thought, well, if we can build it out of wood and we can use all these craftsmen that are no longer actively employed, maybe we can kind of fill a hole. So they developed the aeroplane completely out of plywood and balsa wood and spruce. And initially, the British government weren't interested in it because it seemed to be a step backwards in the way that aeroplanes were being built at the time. So the de Havilland Company financed the prototype's construction completely themselves and then basically demonstrated it to the Air Ministry. And from then on, they got on board with the idea of building an aeroplane out of wood that was then going to go to war. So you can understand they had a bit of reluctance, but once they saw that it was, at the time when they first flew the aeroplane, it was 30 miles an hour faster than the Spitfire, and the Spitfire was the fastest aeroplane the British had ever had, and here, along came the Mosquito, it was 30 miles an hour faster. They saw the potential. The first aeroplanes didn't have any armament at all. They were just built as a high-speed aeroplane, high altitude, high speed, and they could evade the enemy by going faster and higher than they could, and therefore keep away from the bullets. Obviously, that feature didn't last too long. For those of you that are not familiar with the way the Mosquito is constructed, it's sort of built a little bit like a model aeroplane. The fuselage is built in two halves on a male mould. So if you can imagine a mould that's kind of split vertically down the centre of the fuselage, and it's male, and it's got slots in it, sort of a little bit like a toast cooling rack. The bulkheads are fabricated first, and then they dropped into the slots. And then the plywood is wrapped over the mould and held down with steel bands while the glue dries. And then there's a filler layer of balsa wood made and spruce put around all the edges a little bit like a picture frame, and then another layer of plywood laid over the outside. And once that's all gone off, and it sounds like it only takes 5 minutes, but it takes months. And then you can pull the two halves of the fuselage off the moulds and join them together down the centre line. So initially the idea of that was that while the fuselage was in two halves, the factory could fill it with plumbing and wiring and all the services that needed to go into these two halves while they were in a stand, and that was easy to work on. Then you could kind of just join them together at the end and you wouldn't have to do any work inside, which I'm sure worked very well in the de Havilland factory, but didn't work so well for us, because in order to do that you have to have everything on the shelf so that you can fill it all up first. But of course, when you're doing a restoration like this, everything takes a long time to prepare and have ready. And so we built it in the same way. It was on the molds, but we put the things together empty, and then we filled it all up inside, so we had little small engineers that could crawl down inside and do the wiring and that kind of thing.
So you pretty much started from scratch by the time you tore this apart, is that correct?
Yes, well, sort of taking a step back, there's a fellow in Auckland in New Zealand who in the early 80s was involved in the Warbird Association in Auckland in New Zealand, and there were 80 mosquitoes sent to New Zealand after World War II, and there were quite a few mosquito projects lying around and a fair bit of mosquito stuff, and obviously no mosquitoes flying. So this group of guys thought, well, if we can get hold of a project from somewhere and we can get enough drawings and plans, we can probably build the mould and recreate the woodwork that we need to go with all these parts we've got. So they all got together and had a wonderful brainstorming session about how that was going to work, and then all went off in their separate directions. But one of them, fortunately, had been bitten by the bug badly enough to carry on with it, and his name's Glyn Powell. Now, Glyn, was a successful businessman in his own right, and he basically devoted everything he had, all his money and all his time. He resigned from day-to-day work and took on the process of finding the drawings and building the mould for the mosquito fuselage, and that took him approximately 15 years of full-time work. He went all around the world finding the plans, because the mosquito was built in Australia, Canada and the UK, so there were caches of drawings all around the world. After he had gathered up more than 10,000 factory drawings, he went back to his workshop in New Zealand and began lofting the mould to build the fuselage, which is the sort of key factor for a mosquito restoration. Once you've got the mould, you can build the fuselage. Without a mould, you really can't make it. So he kind of had to reverse engineer the mould drawings, because there were no drawings for the moulds. I think that in factory time they would make the mould and send it out to the shop, and the people that were building the aeroplane didn't really need to know how to make the mould because it was already built. But in our case, or in Glenn's case, he had to sort of start with the drawings for the aeroplane and develop the mould that made that aeroplane from the drawings of the actual part. So quite a complex process. But to his credit, it's worked out extremely well. His mould is made out of wood, but originally in the factory they were made out of concrete. And some were made out of wood and some were made out of concrete. But his is made out of wood. And so far we have had 5 fuselages off that mould. This was the second fuselage to come off it. The first one is for a static aeroplane in Alberta in Canada. No, not Alberta. Anyway, Windsor. Thank you. Windsor in Canada. And then this is the second aeroplane to come off the mould, and there's been 3 others since then. So, you know, there is a bit of a future, I suppose, for mosquito restorations thanks to having the mould. And, you know, if anybody wants one, come find me afterwards.